The first thought that came to my mind was that the Allies were actual entities, and I had suspected without ever daring to admit it, even to myself. I had seen them and felt them and communicated with them. I was euphoric. I embraced LaGuardia and began to explain to her the crux of my intellectual dilemma. I had seen the Allies without the aid of Don Juan or Don Gennaro, and the act made all the difference in the world to me. I told LaGuardia that once I had reported to Don Juan that I had seen one of the Allies, he had laughed and urged me not to take myself so seriously and to disregard what I had seen. I had never wanted to believe I was having hallucinations, but I did not want to accept that there were Allies either. My rational background was unbending. I could not bridge the gap. This time, however, everything was different. And the thought that they were actual beings on this earth and that were from another world without being aliens to the earth was more than I could bear. I said to LaGuardia, half in jest, that secretly I would have given anything to be crazy. That would have absolved some part of me from the crushing responsibility of revamping my understanding of the world. The irony of it was that I could not have been more willing to revamp my understanding of the world on an intellectual level, that is. But that was not enough. It had never been enough. And that had been my insurmountable obstacle all along, my deadly flaw. I had been willing to dally in Don Juan's world in a semi-convinced fashion. Therefore, I had been a quasi-sorcerer. All my efforts had been no more than my inane eagerness to fence with the intellectual as if I were in academia, where one can do that very thing from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., at which time, duly tired, one goes home. Don Juan used to say as a joke that, after arranging the world in a most beautiful and enlightened manner, the scholar goes home at 5 o'clock in order to forget his beautiful arrangement. While LaGuardia made us some food, I had worked feverishly on my notes. I felt much more relaxed after eating. LaGuardia was in the best of spirits. She clowned the way Don Gennaro used to, imitating the gestures I made while I wrote. "What do you know about the Allies, Guardia?" I asked. "Only what the Nawal told me," she replied. "He said that the Allies were forces that a sorcerer learns to control. He had two inside his gourd, and so did Gennaro." "How did they keep them inside their gourds?" "No one knows that. All the Nawal knew was that a tiny, perfect gourd with a neck must be found before one could harness the Allies." "Where can one find that kind of gourd?" "Anywhere. The Nawal left word with me. In case we survived the attack of the Allies, we should start looking for the perfect gourd, which must be the size of the thumb of the left hand. That was the size of the Nawal's gourd." "Have you seen his gourd?" "No, never. The Nawal said that a gourd of that kind is not in the world of men. It is like a little bundle that one can distinguish hanging from their belts. But if you deliberately look at it, you will see nothing. The gourd, once it is found, must be groomed with great care. Usually sorcerers find gourds like that on vines in the woods. They pick them and dry them, then they hollow them out. Then they smooth them and polish them. Once the sorcerer has his gourd, he must offer it to the Allies and entice them to leave there. If the Allies consent, the gourd disappears from the world of men, and the Allies become an aid to the sorcerer. The Nawal and Gennaro could make their Allies do anything that needed to be done, things they themselves could not do. Such as, for instance, sending the wind to chase me or sending that chicken to run inside Lydia's blouse. I heard a peculiar prolonged hissing sound outside the door. It was the exact sound I had heard at Donna Soldad's house 2 days before. This time, I knew it was the jaguar. The sound did not scare me. In fact, I could have stepped out to see the jaguar had LaGuardia not stopped me. "You're still incomplete," she said. "The Allies would feast on you if you got out by yourself, especially that daring one that's growling out there right now." "My body feels very safe," I protested. She patted my back and held me down against the bench on which I was writing. "You're not a complete sorcerer yet," she said. "You have a huge patch in your middle, and the force of those allies would yank it out of place. They are no joke. What are you supposed to do when an ally comes to you in this fashion?" I do not bother with them one way or the other. The Nawal taught me to be balanced and not to seek anything eagerly. Tonight, for instance, I knew which allies would go to you. If you can ever get a gourd and groom it, you may be eager to get them. I am not. Chances are I'll never get them myself. They are a pain in the neck. Why? Because they are forces, and as such, they can drain you to nothing. The Nawal said that one is better off with nothing except one's purpose and freedom. Someday when you're complete, perhaps you will have to choose whether or not to keep them. I told her that I personally liked the jaguar, even though there was something overbearing about it. She peered at me. There was a look of surprise and bewilderment in her eyes. "I really like that one," I said. "Tell me what you saw," she said. I realized at that moment that I had automatically assumed that she had seen the same things I had. I described in great detail the four allies as I had seen them. She listened more than attentively. She appeared to be spellbound by my description. "The allies have no form," she said when I had finished. "They are like a presence, like a wind, like a glow. The first one we found tonight was a blackness that wanted to get inside my body. That's why I screamed. I felt it reaching up my legs. The others were just colors. Their glow was so strong, though, that it made the trail look as if it were daytime." Her statements astounded me. I had finally accepted, after years of struggle and purely on the basis of our encounter with them that night, that the allies had a consensual form, a substance which could be perceived equally by everyone's senses. I jokingly told LaGuardia that I had already written in my notes that they were creatures in that form. "What am I going to do now?" I asked in a rhetorical sense. "It's very simple," she said. "Write that they are not." I thought that she was absolutely right. "Why do I see them as monsters?" I asked. "That's no mystery," she said. "You haven't lost your human form. The same thing happened to me. I used to see the allies as people. All of them were Indian men with horrible faces and mean looks. They used to wait for me in deserted places. I thought they were after me as a woman. But now I used to laugh his head off at my fears. But I still was half dead with fright. One of them used to come and sit on my bed and shake it until I would wake up. The fright that ally used to give me was something that I didn't want repeated. Even now that I'm changed. Tonight I think I was as afraid of those allies as I used to be." "You mean that you don't see them as human beings anymore?" "No, not anymore. The Nawal told you that an ally is formless. And he is right. An ally is only a presence, a helper. That is nothing. And yet it is as real as you and me." "Have the little sisters seen the allies?" "Everybody has seen them one time or another." "Are the allies just the force for them too?" "No, they are like you. They haven't lost their human form yet. None of them has. For all of them, the little sisters, the Gineros and Soldad, the allies are horrendous things. With them, the allies are malevolent, dreadful creatures of the night. The sole mention of the allies sends Lydia and Josefina and Pablito into a frenzy. Rosa and Nesta are not that afraid of them, but they don't want to have anything to do with them either. Benigno has his own design, so he's not concerned with them. They don't bother him or me, for that matter. But the others are easy prey for the allies, especially now that the allies are out of the Nawal and Gennaro's gourds. They come all the time looking for you." "The Nawal told me that as long as one clings to the human form, one can only reflect that form. And since the allies feed directly onto our life force in the middle of our stomach, they usually make us sick. And then we see them as heavy, ugly creatures. Is there something that we can do to protect ourselves or to change the shape of those creatures? What all of you have to do is lose your human forms, What do you mean? My question did not seem to have any meaning for her. She stared at me blankly, as if waiting for me to clarify what I had just said. She closed her eyes for a moment. You don't know how the human mold and the human form. You don't know about the human mold and the human form, do you? She asked. I stared at her. I've seen that you know nothing about them, she said, and smiled. You are absolutely right, I said. The Narwhal told me that the human form is a force, she said, and the human mold is, well, is a mold. He said that everything has a particular mold. Plants have molds, animals have molds, worms have molds. You are sure the Narwhal never showed you the human mold? I told her that he had sketched the concept, but in a very brief manner. Once he had tried to explain to me something about a dream I had had. In the dream in question, I had seen a man who seemed to be concealing himself in the darkness of a narrow gully. To find him there scared me. I looked at him for a moment, and then the man stepped forward and made himself visible to me. He was naked, and his body glowed. He seemed to be delicate, almost frail. I liked his eyes. They were friendly and profound. I thought they were very kind. But then he stepped back into the darkness of the gully, and his eyes became like two mirrors, like the eyes of a ferocious animal. Don Juan said that I had encountered the human mold in dreaming. He explained that sorcerers have the avenue of their dreaming to lead them to the mold, and that the mold of men was definitely an entity that could be seen by some of us at certain times when we are imbibed with power, and by all of us for sure at the moment of our death. He described the mold as being the source, the origin of man, since without the mold to group together the force of life, there was no way for the force to assemble itself into the shape of man. He interpreted my dream as a brief and extraordinary simplistic glance at that mold. He said that my dream had restated the fact that I was a simple-minded and very earthy man. Lagorda laughed and said that she would have said the same thing herself. To see the mold as an average naked man, then as an animal, had been indeed a very simplistic view of the mold. Perhaps it was just a stupid, ordinary dream, I said, trying to defend myself. No, she said with a large grin. You see, the human mold glows, and it's always found in water holes and narrow gullies. Get out of here, Daisy. Why in gullies and water holes? I asked. It feeds on water. Without water, there is no mold, she replied. I know that the Narwhal took you to the water holes regularly in hopes of showing you the mold. But your emptiness prevented you from seeing anything. The same thing happened to me. He used to make me lie naked on a rock in the very center of a particularly dried up water hole. But all I did was to feel the presence of something that scared me out of my wits. Why does emptiness prevent one from seeing the mold? The Narwhal said that everything in the world is a force, a pull or a push. In order for us to be pushed or pulled, we need to be like a sail, like a kite in the wind. But if we have a hole in the middle of our luminosity, the force goes through it and never acts upon us. The Narwhal told me that Gennaro liked you very much and tried to make you aware of the hole in your middle. He used to fly his sombrero as a kite to tease you. He even pulled you from the hole until you had diarrhea, but you never caught on to what he was doing. Why didn't they tell me as plainly as you have told me? They did, but you didn't notice their words. I found her statement impossible to believe. To accept that they had told me about it and I had not acknowledged it was unthinkable. Do you ever see the mole, Gorder? I asked. Sure, when I become complete again. I went to that particular watering hole one day by myself, and there it was. It was a radiant, luminous being. I could not look ahead. It blinded me. But being in its presence was enough. I felt happy and strong, and nothing else mattered. Nothing. Just being there. That was all I wanted. The narwhal said that sometimes, if we have enough personal power, we can catch a glimpse of the mold, even though we are not sorcerers. When that happens, we say that we have seen God. He said that if we call it God, it is the truth. The mold is God. I had a dreadful time understanding the narwhal because I was a very religious woman. I had nothing else in the world but my religion. So to hear the narwhal say that the things he used to say made me shiver. But then I became complete, and the forces of the world began to pull me. I knew that the narwhal was right. The mold is God. What do you think? The day I see it, I'll tell you, Lagorda, I said. She laughed and said that the narwhal used to make fun of me, saying that the day I would see the mold, I would probably become a Franciscan friar, because in the depths of me, I was a religious soul. Was the mold you saw a man or a woman? I asked. Neither. It was simply a luminous being. The narwhal said that I could have asked something for myself, that a warrior cannot let the chance pass, but I could not think of anything to ask for. It was better that way. I have the most beautiful memory of it. The narwhal said that a warrior with enough power can see the mold many, many times. What a great fortune that must be. But if the human mold is what puts us together, what is the human form? Something sticky, a sticky force that makes us the people we are. The narwhal told me that the human form has no form. Like the allies that we carried in, that he carried in his gourd, it's anything. But in spite of not having form, it possesses us during our lives and doesn't leave us until we die. I've never seen the human form, but I have felt it in my body. She then described the very complex series of sensations she had had over a period of years that culminated in a serious illness, the climax of which was a bodily state that reminded her of descriptions I had read of a massive heart attack. She said that the human form, as a force that it is, left her body after a serious internal battle that manifested itself as illness. It sounds to me as if you had a heart attack, I said. Maybe I did, she replied. But one thing I know for sure, the day I had it, I lost my human form. I became so weak that for days I couldn't even get out of my bed. Since that day, I haven't had the energy to be my old self. From time to time, I have tried to get into my old habit, but I didn't have the strength or the energy or the strength to enjoy them the way I used to. Finally, I gave up trying. What is the point of losing your human form? A warrior must drop the human form in order to change, to really change. Otherwise, there is only talk about change, like in your case. Now, narwhal said that it's useless to think or hope that one can change one's habits. One cannot change one iota as long as one holds on to the human form. The narwhal told me that a warrior knows that he cannot change, and yet he makes it his business to try to change, even though he knows he won't be able to. That's the only advantage a warrior has over an average man. The warrior is never disappointed when he fails to change. But you are still yourself, Gorda, aren't you? No, not anymore. The only thing that makes you think you are yourself is the form. Once it leaves, you are nothing. But you still talk and think and feel as you always did, don't you? No, not at all. I'm new. She laughed and hugged me as if she were consoling a child. Only Eligio and I have lost our form, she went on. It was our great fortune that we lost it while the narwhal was among us. You people will have a horrid time. That is your fate. Whoever loses it next will have only me as a companion. I already feel sorry for whoever it will be. What else did you feel, Lagorda, when you lost your form, besides not having enough energy? The narwhal told me that a warrior without form begins to see an eye. I saw an eye in front of me every time I closed my eyes. It got so bad that I couldn't rest anymore. The eye followed me wherever I went. I nearly went mad. Finally, I suppose, I became used to it. And now I don't even notice it because it has become a part of me.